Hey everyone, welcome to Pop Culture Quorum Deo. I'm Jeff, one of your regular hosts. Jared is still stuck in a post-Christmas food coma, so you're with me today. Well, not with me solo, pun intended. I've brought in some certified Star Wars nerds to help me review The Rise of Skywalker. I also need to give you a heads up that, in a sad first for the podcast, my software decided to take a brief break mid-recording. To fill in the silence, I brought in an extra special guest to narrate what we're talking about. I think that checks the to-do list for the intro, so let's get going on our review of Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. All right, I am here with my special guest hosts, and we are ready to talk about the end of the Skywalker era of Star Wars. Let me get you guys introduced first. So to my left is someone you have heard before if you listen to the various Pop Culture Quorum Deo podcasts. It is Mr. Nick Duncan. He's the headmaster at Highland Room Academy, where he graciously continues to employ me from time to time. Diehard Star Wars fan. I'm very thankful for our friendship and the fact that he continues to help me make money. I also have with me Joe Davis. Joe is a friend, an educator, storytelling analyst. Just so many hats this guy wears. So you guys are going to enjoy our conversation about Star Wars, I trust, because I've talked a lot of this out with these guys in advance, and it's always been a blast. So, Nick, how are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you on. And Joe, I'm going to also ask you how you're doing, but I want you to put a plug in for your podcast.
Yeah, sure. First of all, I'm doing well. Excited to be here. It's my first time guest speaking on the podcast, but also just finished wrapping recording of my second episode with a fellow friend, mutual friend of ours, Terry Gann, for Script Be Manuscript, a podcast that is completely devoted to breaking down and analyzing written works that have been turned into movies, talking about storytelling devices. We do a little bit of everything on that podcast. We talk about pop culture. We talk about themes. And there's a little bit of trying to encourage future storytellers. Here are some things to think about, some storytelling 101, if you will. So loving it, enjoying it, and love to be here and talk about Star Wars. So.
Well, I'm glad to have you guys. So just to follow up on something Joe mentioned there, you have also heard Terry Gant multiple times on the Pop Culture Quorum Deo podcast. He and Joe are starting their own kind of thing, and I'm hoping to promote it through the PCCD world, but you guys need to check it out. It is Script versus Manuscript.
Script versus Manuscript.
And I sat in listening to an episode they just recorded on Conan the Barbarian.
Yes.
Didn't know anything about Conan. Totally going to go check out Conan.
So, good. Very good.
You have won my interest. Guys, I don't think the podcast is live by the time you'll be hearing this. If it is, more power to you. But if not, check the Pop Culture Quorum Deo social media stuff. I will let you know when their podcast goes live. You totally need to subscribe. All that wrapped up, guys. Let's talk about The Rise of Skywalker. So can we just go around real quick and establish our bona fides? So real quick, where you first ran into Star Wars, maybe most favorite of the franchise. So it can be films, Clone Wars, whatever. Just let our listeners know why they should listen to you.
Yeah. So I was talking to somebody just the other day and saying I don't remember a time when I didn't know about Star Wars. My mom is a huge Star Wars fan. It's something my dad could have always cared less about, but my mom was always a huge fan, and so we were just always watching it. We had it on VHS. I still have I have the originals unedited without the Lucas edits, New Millennium edits. On VHS. And so just always been watching Star Wars. My mom, even when I was younger, brought home the Phantom Menace, a bootleg copy of the Phantom Menace that she had unwittingly bought from a street vendor on a women's trip to New York as she was on with our church. So I was the coolest guy in school at that point because we were watching Phantom Menace together. We didn't know about Jar Jar Binks at that point, so we were ignorant. But as far as my favorite Star Wars, it's Empire Strikes Back. I think that that's the best film in the saga. So that's kind of where I'm at on that. Love New Hope, love Return of the Jedi also. But as long as there's Star Wars, I'm here for it. So
yeah, one of the things you've done is pushed me to watch the Clone Wars, and as I'm starting to kind of delve into those waters a little bit. I'm really thankful for that influence. Yeah. I'd kind of dismiss him like, cartoon, whatever. Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to the prequel trilogy, especially, to me, watching through the Clone Wars cartoon series really bumped episode 3 up in my, if I was ranking all 9 of the saga movies, they bumped them up a notch, because there's a lot going on in 3 with Anakin and Obi-Wan that feels forced as far as their friendship and their brotherhood. Like, it's supposed to be there, but you just don't get a lot of that in 1 and 2. And so the Clone Wars really gives you that. Like, they're fighting this war together, brothers in arms, and some really good story arcs with Mandalore and a lot of good stuff going on. Dave Filoni gets it.
Dave Filoni should literally get it. Like, the keys.
He should get the keys to Star Wars.
I don't know if anyone with power and influence is listening, but Dave Filoni should get
it. If you
the keys.
Are, please give Dave Filoni the keys to the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, the thing you hit on a bunch of this too, but the thing that Clone Wars have already done, I'm like 5 episodes in, it makes me realize why anybody cared about Anakin.
Yeah.
Like, why they saw him as a loss when he went to the dark side or whatnot. He's not a compelling character in terms of like wanting to root for him in the films. Clone Wars fixes that. So what about you, man? Are you into the Star Wars thing?
Oh gosh. Star Wars. I can't even remember a time where I didn't love Star Wars. I actually think, going back into the deep annals of my memory, I think Return of the Jedi was the first Star Wars film I ever saw. I was really young, and I think Dad was just watching it on TV. And I walked in and said, you know, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, son, I have something to show you. And
thank God for good dad.
Yeah, it was great. Actually, at the time of this recording, Dad was watching Return of the Jedi last night when we went over there for dinner. So,
well, and good moms. I didn't mean to push moms.
Yeah.
No worries.
Yeah. for those who have influenced us into what is good. Yeah. And so if I remember correctly, that was my first Star Wars movie. Then, of course, went back and saw the entire original trilogy. Loved it. I remember seeing Phantom Menace in theaters. At that point, I was probably too young to really understand why it was bad. But it was not as good. And I think even then I could recognize that. Moving through, went and saw Attack of the Clones in theaters, went and saw Revenge of the Sith in theaters, and seen all the new ones in theaters. So, yeah, I've kind of been there for all of them. Star Wars is one of my favorite stories. It is so many things to me as far as its influence on culture, its deep-seatedness in ancient storytelling, speaking about the original trilogy. And it is one of the greatest stories, I think, that's come out in the last 50, 60 years. So, and I think because of that, it also drives people to be very divisive and divided when it doesn't meet those expectations. And so, I think that that's a good thing. You know, I've heard so many people say, man, I'm just so sick and tired of Star Wars fans arguing about Star Wars. But, you know, we argue because we love it. We argue because it means something and it matters. And I love this podcast and what we're doing here because it matters. Talking about stories matters. And if we could just continue to encourage people to do that, then I'm here for it. So,
well said, sir. Well said. I won't say that Star Wars belongs to this, but to your point, it's what matters that prompts argument, right? So the church has been trying to sort out theology, right, forever.
Sure.
It's because it's important. Star Wars doesn't rise to that, but it's sort of in the same arena of things we love and care enough about to have an opinion and advocate for.
That's
politics, right? I mean, holiday, everybody's going to these Christmas dinners terrified that somebody's going to bring up Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. Those things are important enough that we care enough to stake a claim and try to defend it.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Yeah. And it is sad that the Star Wars fandom is so divided. Just to put mine on the record, there's a significant age
difference. I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you for just a second.
No, go right ahead.
I forgot to give my favorite film.
Yes, please do.
Because I think you and I might disagree on this, but I'm an Empire Strikes Back guy.
Yes, sir.
That's the greatest Star Wars film. It has my favorite moment in Star Wars. I have to sleep on this.
My whatever could that be?
Some things have come up that
may not be what you think.
Yeah, okay. Some things have come up that have sort of changed my opinion. Yeah, it's not what most people say.
Okay.
My favorite moment in Star Wars is in the very beginning of Empire Strikes Back when Luke is lost and Han Solo calls out to the deck officer and he asks him where Luke is and he says, you know, maybe why don't you go find out? It's getting dark out there. And then a couple things happen and essentially he tells them I'm going to go find him. And they say he's going to die. And he's like, okay, well, then I'll see you. And he goes out. That's my favorite, absolute most favorite moment in Star Wars. I love
my friends out
there. Yeah, my getting dark out, my friends out there. And he says after the shield's been adjusted for the speeders and they say, no, it's not. He's like, oh, I'll go out on a Tauntaun then. And he's like, you'll be dead before you reach the first marker. And he goes, I'll see you. And then he charges out there. And it's so great. And like, I'm one of five brothers. My father had five boys and two girls. And stories about brotherhood just always hit me hard.
Sure.
They hit me very hard.
Sure.
And so that brotherhood that exists between Han Solo and Luke Skywalker in that moment, that's my favorite moment in Star Wars.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I would not argue that it's the best moment in Star Wars. Like, I think there are better moments, but subjectively, it's just my favorite.
Yeah.
I just love it. When that moment comes on TV, I tell everybody stop talking.
Actually, yeah.
That's me when Star Wars is
on. Yeah, nothing else matters right now.
I've got four kids.
And I can't.
I feel like I need to hand out sedatives because I'm like, guys, we got to listen. Stop talking, you know?
Yeah, I will tell my soon-to-be four-year-old son, who I've been starting to show the original trilogy, I'll say, if you're not going to sit down and be still, we'll just turn it off, because this is, some things have to be sacred. This is disrespect. Probably a little over the top. But.
So we've established a triage of importance. There's theology, and then politics, and then Star Wars.
Yeah.
And we're gonna honor those. No, I'm glad you interrupted to tell me that. I am not part of the sheeple cult on the Empire Strikes Back. And I'm actually just being provocative there. It's an awesome movie. It's an incredible movie. I like Return of the Jedi better because of what it does in the narrative.
Yeah.
It's Ewoks that does it for you.
Yeah, it definitely is Ewoks. Speaking of which, I just started trying to watch the Ewoks movies with my kids. Y'all know about these things?
Yeah.
Made for TV Ewoks movies?
Yes.
My kids could not be more checked out.
Yeah.
No, I like Luke at the height of his power. He's done the work to be a hero.
Yeah.
He's grown. And he uses it for good ends. He liberates, Jabba's palace, but then he goes and lays himself down for his father.
Yeah.
That's good. And I get that's a strong pick for your favorite movie. And honestly, I always say that when it comes to Star Wars, or really any sequel, if the sequels should, in theory, make what has already happened better, because you know that there's a good,
end,
there's a final end coming to the story. So to me, Empire is still really good because you know that all the struggle that Luke's going through in that film is leading to, his final victory and triumph, redeeming his father.
So. Yeah.
So we've got mild differences on best, maybe. Any differences on worst?
Probably.
So for me, The Last Jedi is not only the worst Star Wars movie, it is so offensive. Like, I don't want to live in a world where it exists.
Yeah. I go back and forth between The Last Jedi and Attack of the Clones. One of them makes me... Attack of the Clones makes me kind of want to throw up because it's just so bad. It's just not executed well at all. The Last Jedi makes me want to hunt down Rian Johnson.
Yeah,
because it just does so much violence to the world that George Lucas established.
And maybe this is me being too detailed with the question and answer, but I think it depends on how you define worst. So, like,
worst is defined by The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct. Defined by example.
So if we're saying the worst film in as far as its impact on the narrative, the overall looted narrative of Star Wars, The Last Jedi is definitely the winner. But The Last Jedi does have things that are interesting in it that, and I don't rate these things very highly, but there are things that are interesting in it. Things like the relationship between Kylo Ren and Rey. There's some interesting things that happen there. There's the fight scene, whatever. Like, that's decent.
Snoke's throne room.
Yeah, Snoke's throne room is a good fight scene, I guess. And like Attack of the Clones doesn't have those things.
He says as he holds his nose.
Yeah, exactly. So like if I'm sitting down on a Saturday afternoon and I have only those two movies on my shelf and I have to pick one of them to watch, I pick The Last Jedi for those reasons. But I think you and I are in agreement that The Last Jedi is more evil in what it does to the story. Like it is just... It makes me want to hunt down Rian Johnson. So I don't know.
I think the difference is I do come a little different angle.
Yeah.
I think the difference between Phantom Menace and Last Jedi is for me the difference between worthless and offensive.
Yeah, that's a good.
You know, like I could put on The Phantom Menace as a cartoon for my kids.
Yeah.
And I did watch The Last Jedi recently. It is visually interesting. It really is.
It's an amazing looking film.
Yeah, it looks wonderful. So it's not like it's without merit. For me, story is about character.
Yeah.
Character development.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
Anyway, so the reason I bring up The Last Jedi here to talk about The Rise of Skywalker is that I think the way, and I'm speaking to the listener here, I think the way you're going to appreciate The Rise of Skywalker is going to be significantly affected by the way you think about The Last Jedi.
Oh, 100%.
And so if you think it's a mess to be cleaned up, you're going to kind of just by default look at The Rise of Skywalker from,
in a positive, in a generally positive way.
Yeah, yeah. And if you thought The Last Jedi was sort of what Star Wars should now be, you're going to have a much different
then you're going to want to hunt down J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, exactly. You were showing me, Nick, before we began, this is reflecting the Rotten Tomatoes scores, right? So for The Last Jedi, professional critics over the moon. Fans hated it.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to The Rise of Skywalker, these few days that we're living into after the release of the movie, it's pretty much diametrically opposed.
Yeah, the critics are low. Fans are really positive, 86%.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this group right here could do a lot of fanboying out just about the movie.
Sure.
But the pop culture quorum deo thing is to try to look at these movies as Christians and to do what Paul says about taking every thought captive. Some of those you're going to release and say, you know, you're beneficial, profit me. Some of those you're going to lock in a dungeon and try to square away. And so with that in mind, you know, normally we start with these worldview analysis issues of breaking it up and saying, how does this story conform to the story God's telling about Jesus in history? I'm going to set that aside, though, because so much of the Star Wars meta-narrative, mm-hmm. you know, that's what the worldview question is. What's the meta-narrative? You got to reach into all the other
the whole
films.
Saga.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to limit us to the analysis questions. And listeners, hopefully you're still mindful of those. We have published those a couple different places. You can check our website and whatnot. But at this point, I need to note we're fully into spoiler territory.
Yeah, that's a good
nothing will be protected. And I'm going to roll out on our first question a summary of the story, trying to give just a big arc.
Sure.
Y'all tell me what I get wrong, okay? So The Rise of Skywalker is built around the return of Emperor Palpatine from the original trilogy.
Right.
The cast of characters we have met in what's called the sequel trilogy, beginning with The Force Awakens. So Rey, Finn,
Poe Dameron.
Poe are kind of responding to this on the side of the good guys. On the side of the bad guys, Kylo Ren has seen Palpatine as a threat that he needs to take down. And basically the crux of the movie is bringing these three narrative threads together to some kind of resolution, mm-hmm. ultimately culminating in the triumph of Rey and her her companions.
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah,
yeah, Rey and her band.
Okay. Well, so the second question is where I'm going to lean on you guys a little bit heavier. The way we frame it is, where am I? And in asking that question, we want to see the style and shape of the imaginary world. And that may seem a little vague. So what I'm trying to get into with this question is, what is moral and immoral in this world? How do we know that? Does it correspond to what we know to be objective morality? Because, you know, Joe, to your point earlier, not to set you up too directly, but I think part of the enduring appeal of Star Wars is that it gives us some, that there's some correspondence with objective morality.
Sure.
The interesting thing about the film, though, is that it also draws on this dualistic view of the universe that I think as Christians we would go, yeah, that's not exactly how things work.
Yeah.
So there's a tension there.
Sure. Right.
Either one of y'all want to run with that?
Well, I'll just start by saying we talked about the bickering of Star Wars fans. there's kind of two different types of fighting or nitpicking that goes on with Star Wars fans. And one of them I'm interested in engaging in, and one of them I'm not. So Star Wars is a fairy tale, right? So what that means is that a lot of the natural laws and things of the world don't apply. So when people are trying to ask questions about why bombs can fall in out of the sky, but look like they're falling down, almost like gravity's pulling them down, but there's no gravity in the opening scenes of The Last Jedi. I don't care really about that. Those are the kinds of things that people want to pick apart. And I just don't really care about that because in fairy tales and, you know, in Tolkien and Lewis and some of the writers who have done the best work, I would say we all agree with fairy tales, George MacDonald, they talk about fairy stories don't have to appeal to the laws of the natural world, but that moral law never changes.
That's a great point.
And so that's why Star Wars is so engaging and draws you in, is because there's blasters and there's ships and there's laser swords and there's all kinds of awesome things that look really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that are most important that we should care about fighting over are the characters and their arts and how they're growing and are they good and who's bad. And that's really hard with Star Wars because of what you said, because of there's some kind of dualist Buddhist stuff built in that's kind of hard to square, especially when you get to like prequel trilogy and things like that with bringing balance to the Force. I was talking to a friend the other day and like, what does that even fully mean? You know, there's been speculation for years that there would have to be a gray Jedi for that to be true.
Which I hate the thought of at
right,
the core of my
mind. Right. For sure. That goes against everything that we believe as Christians. We believe that, you know, that the good guy's supposed to win, in short. And so, and I think we get that, you know, good guys win. And so that is a good thing about this movie.
And we talked, you and I talked at length right before the premiere of Rise of Skywalker. And one of the questions I asked you, Nick, specifically was, you know, what do you need? What do you need to get out of it to feel like it's, you know, that JJ landed the plane? And right off the bat, if I remember correctly, the first thing you said was good guys have to win.
Yeah.
The good guys have to win. And I will say that Rise of Skywalker does that in a way that I feel satisfied by, right? Like that the good guys win and not in this sort of morally relativistic, compromised way. And that to me is J.J. Abrams going back to what I think the original vein of Star Wars is. Mark Hamill, who played Luke Skywalker, has gone on the record in multiple interviews. This was back before even I think the prequel trilogy came out. But he said, you know, people would ask him, "What do you love about Star Wars?" And he would say, "Well, at its core, it's a moral tale, right? It's a moral tale where good triumphs over evil, and that's its appeal."
And we're living that story in history.
Yeah,
like we have a native affinity for that,
for sure,
because we're looking for the one who triumphs over evil.
Yeah, and our conscience tells us that, like, evil should be punished, and even our own evil should be punished. Like, they, you know, you can run from that as much as you want to, but at the end of the day, there's something, as being image bearers of God, that we know that there's something wrong. There's something off about our world, that this evil that's in it. And these stories help us to negotiate and understand, well, what does that mean? Why is evil bad, and why should it be punished, and why does good need to triumph? And so The Rise of Skywalker, to get back to our subject here, does that for me, that it puts me back into a moral tale. And I think The Last Jedi took me out of it a little bit, and a lot of it, and Rise of Skywalker puts me back into it. So we get back to good versus evil, good triumphing.
One of the things that's so good about the original trilogy is being able to identify with Luke and Han and Leia, because they have flaws, right? They're either prideful, or they're arrogant, or they just don't care about the cause. Oh my gosh. Yeah, Han shot first for anybody listening.
You want to tap that mic and make sure it's on?
Yeah, Han shot first. It's the one thing about the Solo movie that's really good is that Ron Howard gets it.
I got to interrupt you for just a second. I was listening to NPR, and they were talking about the radio dramas that they did. I don't know if you guys know about these, but actually Mark Hamill came on and voiced Luke Skywalker in radio dramatic versions of the original trilogy after they were released.
Which may have been the beginning of his voice work.
Yeah.
For
sure. I was just thinking about that when I was listening to this interview. And in the NPR radio dramatic version, it's very clear. Han shoots first. It's so great.
I repeat. Han shot first.
Sorry, I took you off.
No, you're good. So that we identify with these characters, and we identify with the fact that, like Joe said, we realize there are bad things, there's sin, there's evil in all of us. And so with Luke has to fight against that, right? Mm-hmm. Like at one point, he tries to do what Palpatine wants him to do, which is take his saber in Last Jedi, and not The Last Jedi, in Return of the Jedi, and tries to strike Palpatine down, right? So that he's got that struggle, but ultimately he ends up kind of mortifying that in a way, right? And throwing his lightsaber aside, and that's what kind of redeems his father. But The Last Jedi just whitewashes a lot of that and puts you in this place where you don't know, like, Luke's awful to me, and that's the worst thing about The Last Jedi. And so what The Rise of Skywalker does is tries to fix that as best JJ can with what he has. You know, one of my favorite scenes, again, those spoilers are coming, but is when I don't know how Force Ghosts can transcend into the physical world. We kind of got that in 8 and 9, and I'm not here to squabble over that.
Because Star Wars.
Like, I'm not here to squabble over that a ton. But that when Rey tries to do what Luke taught her to do in 8 and throw her lightsaber away, Force Ghost Luke catches it and says, "You have to have more respect for that than your weapon." And he just straight up says, "I was wrong."
I straight up did a, speaking of being straight up, I did a fist pump.
Thank you, JJ.
For real. If I knew his address, I would send him a Christmas card. Yeah. Like, bless you, my child. So to your point about the morality, or our point, I guess we're developing this. I think that it's interesting that Star Wars is a case study in how Eastern religion doesn't really work.
Right.
Yes.
You're correct.
Because they take the dualistic approach and they say things like it should be held in balance. And I said I wouldn't go into the other movies, but it's the dark side who massacres the Jedi in preschool.
Right.
These aren't things that we're going to celebrate as if they're equal.
Yeah.
We want them rejected. We want them done away with. It's the dark side blowing up planets full of innocent people.
Sadly, it is true. Much of my life was squandered serving actual evil, and not just the so-called dark side of the Force as I led the First Order. On a more positive note, however, Jeff is now beginning a discussion about the character of my counterpart in the Force Dyad, Rey. Let us rejoin him now.
You've got this character of Rey. And again, I was sitting in listening to Joe and Terry on their podcast. Y'all kind of got into this a little bit. You raised these issues that I hadn't thought of. So, listener, they basically presented the idea that Rey should be the protagonist, but she's not really presented as a protagonist. The problem I have with a lot of movies today, I think you gentlemen probably agree with me on this, is that it doesn't know how to portray womanhood.
Agreed.
And so I think the real simplistic storytelling move that we see celebrated, particularly among superhero movies, is that we take a woman and we give her traditionally masculine abilities, traits, and roles. And we say, oh, that's what a strong woman looks like.
That's what makes her a good character.
Right. And so Wonder Woman's a great example of this, right? She just runs around punching Nazis in the face and throwing tanks around. It doesn't really tell me what's distinctly good about womanhood. And I think Star Wars has a problem with this. Rey is a bit of a Mary Sue, and she's the great warrior. But one of the things that I thought was morally beautiful about this film is that we get Rey acting as a young lady, not just the savage warrior princess who's got to set the world aright.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about them going to that tribal celebration.
It was, I think that world is called Kimchi, something like that.
Kimchi's is the one that gets blown up.
Okay.
Where they meet Carrie Russell's character.
Gotcha.
Pozo Buddy.
Gotcha.
So they're on
Zori Bliss.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. So they're on that planetary celebration world. It's Sandy. It's Tatooine adjacent.
That's right.
And there's a festival going on, and Rey is in the middle of this important quest, which is something I liked about the movie. I like the Indiana Jones version.
And that they're all together again.
Yes.
Right? So that's a Star Wars thing, the band of friends together.
Yeah. Her attention is captured by some kids watching the puppet show. And so this movie doesn't give you a lot of time to breathe. You hit the ground running. It's a sprint most of the way through. One of the few still moments is watching some kids laugh. And it enchants her. And then she has this interaction with a younger version of whatever species that is, where she's doting on this little girl. And now it serves the purpose of the movie, because the little girl asks Rey, "What's your last name?" "I don't have one. I'm just Rey." But it looks maternal.
Right? Yeah.
And I appreciate that in a movie that's very much styling Kylo and Rey as opposites of each other, but in sort of that Star Warsian fashion, they're in this movie, they're called a Dyad in the Force.
Right.
She's not just she's not Kylo Ren wearing white. mm-hmm. she actually looks like what you expect a young lady to do in those circumstances.
Yeah.
I don't want to make too much out of this. It's just so rare. No, I can't really brush past it.
Yeah, no, we can't just look past
it. And to that point, like one of the things that I really like about I have problems with Rey as a character because, again, she never fails. She never really loses. She always wins, regardless of who she's fighting. But they portray her in this movie as a healer a couple different times.
Well right? said, sir.
So very, very nurturing, very hospitable. And so she heals that snake monster, which was terrifying. I hate snakes. And so I'm like, this is turning into a horror movie at this point. But she heals that snake creature. And so instead of fighting it, like is the male reaction, right? Like mm-hmm. Poe and Finn are like, Poe's like, I'm going to shoot it.
Sure.
And Rey's like, chill out for a minute, dude. Let me do my thing. And so she heals it, and then it calmly goes away. And then, of course, later on in the climax of the movie, she heals Kylo Ren after having mortally wounded him.
So. Yeah, it's very much, I mean, I don't know a better term to describe it. It's this nurturing, life-giving, distinctively feminine approach to battling evil.
Yeah.
Which is so rare.
Yeah. And I think that this idea of restoration through healing, right? But restoration is also important because you're in the third act of mm-hmm. your story, right? And so Rey,
that's a good point.
Symbolically as she is physically healing these people, symbolically it's sort of a meta sort of commentary on the restoration of what is good. And what is right that we're restoring now. And you know, it's funny. I'm just going to say this one time because we've already talked about it. But in the scene where all the Jedi are talking to her, Anakin comes on and says, restore balance like I did. But then she kills Palpatine. And then, like, that's it. We're done. So I don't understand how that's balanced, right? So because evil's been eradicated, right. Which is in a Christian worldview,
right?
Worldview, we're like, we're cool, hallelujah, brother. Yeah, we're praise like, and amen.
We're like, thank goodness you're not bringing balance in an Eastern way,
right? Whatever. Exactly.
Whatever. Apparently, bringing balance means killing the bad guys,
right?
Which I'm here for.
That. I'm here for that. Yeah, I'm about that. I wouldn't call it bringing balance. I would call some, you know, I would define it differently, but cool. Like
I call it victory.
Yeah, I call it exactly.
Triumph over evil.
You know, and so, but I love this idea of like. Restoration and healing. There was very much a Revelations sort of motif there, and I love that about this movie, and that it gives me that set in a way that's satisfying.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be able to watch this with my daughters. You know, my daughters saw Marvel's Captain Marvel.
Oh boy!
And I spent a lot of time with them being like,
yikers,
yikes,
guys. You can see this the same way you see high fantasy. There's just nothing really true here. And truth be told, as fans here, I know the three of us are fans of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I'm doing a lot of this in The Mandalorian with the shock trooper character, saying, guys, this just isn't why women are special. Yeah. It's not great that she's
just trying to do what all the other guys. She's just beating The Mandalorian up all the time and arm wrestling him and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can be more clever than him, like, she figured out the sniper was around or whatever. You know, she gets to be the hero anyway. I'm just thankful that Star Wars gave me this to put in front of my daughters and say, yeah, you can love Rey in a lot of different ways.
And not to get off on The Mandalorian, but in that same, in the episode, I think it's chapter 4, I think, where the shock trooper is introduced. The better version of the shock trooper is the like housewife that's there. She's like a single mom and she's like taking care of her kid and like defending her kid. And she doesn't pick up a gun until she has to defend her kid.
So well said, sir. So well said.
That's good.
Yeah. Another thing that I appreciate about this movie, and this is just where you get to the big reveal of the movie, Rey is Palpatine's granddaughter. Okay. And so I appreciate that JJ brought us back to that. Ryan treated that as if it didn't matter. That's not true. History has significance. Those things do matter. They just don't have to be definitive, and that's what this movie picks up. So you have this idea that because Rey is a Palpatine, she's somehow predestined to follow in his evil path.
Right.
And the resurrected emperor wants her to take that choice.
To strike him down. Right.
Yeah. And another aspect of morality in this movie that I appreciated that I think went a little under the radar is that when Rey chooses to reject Palpatine's evil influence, she's not the first Palpatine to do that.
Mm.
Her dad had previously
it's good.
Broken with Palpatine, and he did so to protect his daughter.
Yep.
And he gave his life doing it. And so I do, I'm all about the end of the movie where she says her name is Rey Skywalker. I think it's an appropriate adoption motif that this movie has set up. But I also appreciated that she's standing in the line of people who looked at evil and said, whatever it takes, even if it costs me my life, I'm not going to follow in that path. And I honestly don't think the world of The Last Jedi could have made that a credible decision on her part.
Yeah.
I feel like we had to come into another film to get to that point.
Yeah, well, I mean, the biggest flaw with Rey's character is that Rey's character never struggles. And so the only struggle she has is the struggle that JJ has to kind of force in there in nine by giving her this lineage. But, you know, to one other thing I was just thinking about and thinking about what's good, you had said history means something. And the point of history, you know, I work at a classical school, and so sometimes we talk about this, but the progressives want to look at history as either just a way, something to do away with, or to look at history as generally all negative because we live now and those people don't live anymore, we must know more than them.
Sure. Chronological snobbery, or good currency, as
yes, said. Absolutely. And so, and Lewis puts us in screw tape letters, right? If you want to deceive a bunch of people, cut them off from the history of their past. And so something that I like about Rise of Skywalker is that, and that I feel like JJ kind of gets into with Force Awakens also, that's just kind of not innate, is that the characters are meant to look to their heroes, right? So that history means something because what you learn from history is virtue and vice. You want to look back and say, that was good, let's do that. And you want to look back and say, that was really bad, let's not do that again. And so, you know, there's a scene where, and again, a lot of it feels forced as far as character development because none of this really happens in 8. But there's a scene in 9 where Poe says, I'm not Leia, right? Because he's supposed to kind of step in and be the general, right? Mm-hmm. And Finn says, that's for dang sure, mm-hmm. right? So there's this idea that history means something. What Leia did means something. Luke's kind of retconned in 9. Look, he was saying, I'm wrong, and bring balance like I did, right? So like, there's this idea that they're supposed to step in and fulfill, you know, the good things that the original characters did. And of course, I think the biggest example of that is the relationship that Kylo Ren has with his dad, which,
yeah,
I mean, I'm sure we'll get to that, but I nasty cried during that scene.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, yeah, I do want to get there. I'm probably going to get to there more in question 5. Has the gospel plot?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's put a pin there because I don't think we want to come back and exult in that one. Now, to come back to the Rey thing and the portrayal of womanhood, you just raised it for us. There's a lineage here that has to be honored. Maybe you're going to honor that by saying, I'm not going to make the same mistake. But maybe you're going to say, I'm going to continue in that mold. They do a bit of the thing I was criticizing. So we see that long-awaited reveal of Leia training as a Jedi. Mm. And she does it by putting Luke on his back because...
Classic.
You know, hashtag women power, whatever. But she lays it down, right? She says, I've got a different path. And the reason is she saw at the end of her path the death of her son. And so Leia made a choice in the name of family and lineage.
Protecting her child.
To lay down power. And I'll tell you, I didn't know how I was going to like the, you know, the portrayal of Carrie in this film.
Having to force her in because she died.
Yeah, I thought it went pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, I think JJ should be given some sort of award for taking old footage, right, and making it work in a narrative where he didn't even have any influence on The Last Jedi. Or he shouldn't say that. He wasn't in charge of The Last Jedi. And then he's got to kind of pick up where that story stops. And one of his principal characters that he wants to use has passed on. And so all he has is this sort of old footage to use. And he did it in a way that didn't feel super forced. It didn't feel unnatural.
Well, and is pivotal to the telling of the story.
Yeah, and is necessary.
Yeah.
And it's her voice. It's her voice that calls her son out of his wickedness.
That's right.
Yeah.
As her dying act. You talk about ugly crying at the scene with Kylo and Han. I was strangely affected watching Leia covered in the death shroud.
Yep.
And one of the characters there says, goodbye, sweet princess, or something like that. And what actually struck me in that moment is that Carrie Fisher is not a woman who lived her life honorably. But in the Lord's provision, this is kind of going to be the last image we have of her.
That's right.
In this character that we did love and that we hate to see go by. And so I'm like you in that.
There's some common grace there. For
sure. There's some common grace, and I'm thankful for it. Yeah. You know, I don't. It doesn't have any determinative redemptive value for her as an individual.
Correct.
But I appreciate seeing it on the screen.
Yeah.
Anything else, guys? So we've kind of bled into what's good, true, and awesome here.
I would like to say, too, that like in The Rise of Skywalker, you have the sort of the reinstallation of a principle that I think is important. And there are some things that are bad about it, and we'll talk about that, I think, in question four with the wolf monster. You do see sort of going back to the principle, and I think it's a biblical one, of mentorship, discipleship, mm-hmm. The old pouring into the young.
Sure.
One of the things I can't stand in the first two sequel trilogy movies, because it does happen in both, there's a scene in Force Awakens when they're on the freighter frigate where they meet Han Solo and Chewbacca, and they all pile into the Millennium Falcon. They're being chased by brigands and creatures, and they get in there, and Rey says, "You need a co-pilot." And he says, "I got one." He's back there talking about Chewie, who's been wounded. And Rey just sort of assumes his seat, which I'm okay with, right? But what I'm hoping for in that scene is Han Solo says, "Yeah, okay, we're in a bind. You seem to have some skill. Here's what we're going to do." And instead what happens is Rey teaches him how to fly the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, she fixes the
issue. She teaches him how to fly the
Millennium Falcon. Bypass the compressor?
Yeah. Rey teaches Han Solo. I'm going to tap this mic, make sure it's on. Rey teaches Han Solo how to fly. That's absurd.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Sure. It's a huge problem.
It's a problem.
From a character standpoint.
Right, from a storytelling standpoint.
This isn't like the rise of the patriarchy and rebelling.
She never struggles.
She never struggles. Never has to learn. She never has to learn anything.
She
just knows everything.
Same thing in 8 with Luke.
And, right, so then now going to into 8 with Luke, she teaches Luke Skywalker how to be a Jedi.
Right.
She teaches Luke Skywalker how to be a Jedi.
She has him at the tip of her lightsaber.
At the tip of a lightsaber.
He's laying on the ground.
It's twofold, right? So she teaches him how to be a lightsaber in the way that he fights, right? And just from a skill level, but then also educates him on the precepts of being a Jedi.
And how the Force works and
it's absurd.
It's terrible.
That to me is awful storytelling. And from a Christian worldview, it is dangerous because what it says is you don't need tradition. You don't need mentors. You don't need those who have gone in the faith before you.
Yep.
And you can just do it all yourself, right? And we live in this world of, it's just ironic because I'm on a podcast, right? But podcast preaching, I don't need to be a part of a local body. I don't need accountability.
Sure.
I don't need any of those things. I could just be a Christian here in my own little world and do it my way, and that's fine. And that's dangerous.
Yeah, it's postmodern, it's progressive, and it's, again, I just know more because I'm younger than you.
Right? Yeah, because you're older than me. You're not as woke as me.
We can joke about, okay boomer stuff, right? But, Rey just kind of says, "Okay, boomer."
Yeah,
the whole time.
She's in The Rise of Skywalker, and I'm not saying it's great because I do have some problems with this from a different perspective. But at least in The Rise of Skywalker, she has a mentor. She has someone. Leia is training her and pouring into her. And
JJ tries again. He tries his best with what he has, but like you said, he created part of this problem.
Yeah,
in seven, right? But you have the moments where is it Leia that tries to give Luke's lightsaber to her? And Rey says, "I'm not worthy of that or ready for that." And then he even follows what she's learned all the way out to its natural conclusion, which is her going back to Octo and quitting because that's what she knows.
Right.
And then that's the only thing he can do because it's what she would have done. And then Luke has to come in and say, "No, I was wrong about that."
He repented of it.
Yeah.
I do really appreciate the point that this movie attempts to ground her back in the tradition.
Yeah.
She's under Leia's tutelage. But then ultimately, what we see, the first thing we see in her training under Leia is her appealing to the Jedi's to be with her. And some of this, to give the devil his due, is in The Last Jedi, all lives in you now. It's handled completely differently. in The Last Jedi, it's very progressive.
Right.
We don't need anything else. We've got everything we need right here in this one person. In The Rise of Skywalker, it's handled as, no, you're sort of the culmination. Right. You're drawing on these roots.
Right. And you need to be a steward of them. There are things that exist outside of you that mm-hmm. need to be forming who you are.
And you're accountable to them, and you need to right. to give them an honorable presentation.
That, to me, like the accountability to those that have gone before you, that is so crucial to me. I love that about The Rise of Skywalker. And it's unfortunate because the payoff isn't as good because the other two movies don't set it up at all. Sure. Right? So it's all shoehorned into one film. But you know what? I'd rather have it shoehorned into one film than not be there at all.
100%. I mean, this redeems basically the sequel trilogy for me.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
I don't want to watch, if The Last Jedi is where we were going, I'm not really going back to these movies.
Yeah.
I think now I can go back to these movies. Not with the delight I will the original trilogy,
sure.
But I can.
But at least knowing where it's going to go.
Yeah.
Kind of where we started. Like I think five's really good because I know six is coming.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Like seven and eight, at least if you're watching those, you know nine's coming.
Yeah. So the fourth question, what's distorted evil and false? And actually, this is a question that I'm not sure if I've set you guys up to understand well. This is a question where we would have critiqued The Last Jedi because it had adopted chronological snobbery as a positive assumption. Does that make
right,
sense?
Sure. Right. So we've been doing some of that already.
A little bit of that, yeah. We've bled over each one of these. Is there anything you would point to in The Rise of Skywalker and say, you know, actually that's a product of worldly foolishness affecting the story? Or are we kind of here saying, you know what, in fact, this has come back to a better understanding, a more timeless understanding of ultimate reality. Do you see any inherent or egregious foolishness in The Rise of Skywalker?
Well, one low-hanging fruit is a lesbian kiss.
Yeah, of course.
That's, you know, they have, Disney can't, the woke monster can't help itself, but it has to feed, so they jam that in there.
And they lingered on it. You know, the comparison is Beauty and the Beast, the live-action one where LeFou.
Yeah, like has a dance with a guy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very much in the background. My kids didn't pick up on it. This one, the camera puts it center stage,
right.
and it lingers, and it's just a ridiculous, I felt it was a ridiculous attempt to mollify the woke monster without having to give it.
Yeah, I'm not committed to anything. And yeah,
which again is ironic because they're not going to please anybody with that scene.
Right.
Because the woke monster is going to want oh so much more than that.
Yeah.
And we're disgusted by it also as Christians. So,
yeah. Is that really the only thing we would point to in this movie? Is this the kind of movie that you can tell a Christian, like, this thing is going to square up pretty much, not perfectly, but pretty okay with your sense of right and wrong and how the Lord's actually teaching us to view the moral implications of the world?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that most of the problems that I have with Nine are just Star Wars problems.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily like worldview problems. You know, there are things I would do differently probably in the last 30 minutes just from a Star Wars point of view and how Star Wars works. As far as like the Skywalkers and everything, you know, you were talking about Rey taking the Skywalker name. You know, even adoption is a Christian idea, right?
Yeah.
We're adopted and redeemed by a king. I'm fine with that. Also, wish there would have been a little more homage paid to her biological parents, right?
Sure.
And their name.
Sure.
But there's some good stuff in there that you, lineage matters, right? But that you don't have to be defined by that. It's like, those are good things. I mean, I don't really have, my squabbles is just that I prefer Ben Solo over Rey, right? As
yeah.
a character.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I wouldn't say that there's anything necessarily, you know, foolish.
Yeah. Sort of, these two things are not necessarily separated. I think they're linked, but they are different disciplines. So like in my podcast Script Manuscript, like I would definitely be pulling this movie apart, looking at its storytelling and
okay.
how it tells the story.
I'd love to know more about that.
Yeah, so like, you know, something we've already talked about, like Nick just said, Kylo Ren is the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, looking at what is a protagonist, but we're told that Rey's our protagonist, but she doesn't develop like one. She yeah. develops so like an antagonist.
It just falls flat to
right.
me because she just never struggles.
Another thing, Rose is a foil, I think, but also kind of a protagonist.
Who's Rose?
Right. So, exactly. Yeah. Well said.
Can we just pause right there and say yet again to JJ, thank you, sir.
Thank you, yes.
Thank you that you put her on the bench. Is she even in the triumphant, like, one scene?
I don't know.
If she is, it's very minimal.
Dude, I love it so much.
And as a separate comment, like, that poor actress.
Yeah.
She gets hosed.
Yeah. Kelly Marie Tran, I think is her name.
I feel bad.
Because I'm sure a fine human should not take the brunt for the fact that they wrote a terrible character.
It is not her fault, but anyway. There are things that I would love to continue to talk about as far as pulling apart as a story, but coming back to a worldview, I'll be honest, I didn't even pick up on it, but your comments about femininity and Rey, like, being, like, a feminine, like, true, like, our, truly what, feminine truly character, feminine like character.
Christianly
matronly character. I think this may be your hot take that maybe I'm copying, so if this is yours and I'm stealing your thunder, I'm sorry.
Still away, so
Another movie, The Quiet Place.
Yes,
I think you're the one who told me about that. Like,
yeah, I think Jeff Wright put all of us onto The Quiet Place. Yeah, and thankfully so. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I want to cheer. Like, there's times I said this in a written review. I just want to stand up and clap for the mom character in The Quiet Place.
Yeah, that is. Yeah. And Rey kind of, she's not as good, but she kind of goes into that vein. I think, you know, obviously good triumphs over evil. We have, like, obviously, redemption is a major theme throughout the whole film, which is a huge Christian precept. So there's a lot of really good world from a worldview perspective. There's a lot of good things that I don't have kids. I hope to have kids one day. And there's a lot of things that, like, when my kids watch this movie, I'm going to be like, did you catch that? Did you catch that? Did you catch that? Which I love. And the original trilogy has that all the time.
Absolutely.
It just hits me with it again and again and again. And this movie felt, well, it's what we said when we came out of theater.
Yeah.
This is the, out of all the films that have come out since the original trilogy in the saga, this is the one that feels the most like a Star Wars movie to me.
Well said.
And so, yeah, I champion it.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice now. How many times have you seen it?
Just once. Hopefully at least a couple more times, but only once at this
point. You said one at this point.
Too. One at this point, but at least two and probably three in here in the near future are planned.
I think this movie is going to grow in admiration. I think this movie, it's fun. Now, the pacing is a little disjointed because he's got to tell two movies.
It's the worst part of the movie is the fact that you're drinking through a fire hose the whole time, because everything that is the opening crawl and the first about 30 minutes of the movie should have been 8.
Yeah, that's so. Well said. So you kind of give it those, and it's trying to clean up the mess. But I think people are going to keep coming back to this one in the same way that, like, maybe this isn't the case for y'all. I put on Return of the Jedi before I put on a lot of the other ones because I want to see Luke take Jabba down. I want to see Throne Room. I want to see the death of Palpatine or whatever it was called or whatever it is now.
Whatever it is now.
Yeah.
The near death. The mutilation of Palpatine.
Yeah.
The loss of fingers.
Oh, boy.
So this is Star Wars stuff. I guess then, guys.
Which, also, why doesn't
Zombie Palps.
He doesn't suck the Force out of anybody in between. Does he have... I don't know.
I'm hoping for some related stuff to help me with Palpatine.
This is the novels and the comics.
This is the thing about Star Wars is that people can go, oh, there's a question you have? I'll write a whole book about it.
Yeah, so I can... You were talking about the bombs that fall even though there's no gravity.
Yeah, whatever.
It's much easier for me to say, oh, there's magnetism, than it is for me to say Luke Skywalker checks out for multiple decades.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can fix that in my head, right?
One is like just contrivances for storytelling, but the other deals with the looted narrative of the work. And those are two separate things. I can be okay with Force stuff. I can be okay with bombs. I can't be okay with Luke being where he's at. I can't be okay with any of the original trilogy characters being where they're at because it is ludonarratively dissonant with the original trilogy.
And again, Nine can't totally fix it. Worst thing about the sequel trilogy is that Han's a smuggler again and that Leia's fighting another endless war, seemingly endless, and they're divorced, or at least not together, separated, whatever, and that Luke is a whiny baby again. But he's back where he was, you know, when he first gets to Dagobah. Right. So
the original trilogy
Yoda has to come fix him again.
Yeah.
Right? So
the original trilogy said they changed the world. The sequel trilogy says no, they didn't.
Yeah, they really didn't. They really didn't learn anything, actually.
In fact, they need to be taught by a younger progressive.
They need to be taught by this new random person who's here.
But I really do think, considering that Rise of Skywalker wraps up this era of Star Wars storytelling, they kind of brought it back and said, nope, she actually is a product of Leia's family.
Right.
You know, she's part of Luke grew. It's weird to say this, but like his arc got stunted and malformed, but then it came back.
Right.
So I do think that it kind of comes back and says, no, what they did, maybe what they did to change the universe wasn't wrapped up
right.
when we thought it was, but they really did change the universe. And this new generation's inheriting it and carrying it on.
I will say this. To me, I've thought about this a lot the last week or so. To me now, the best thing about 8 is the fact that at least Luke comes back in the end and does that really cool thing where he force projects himself across the galaxy. Because that it leaves the window open for JJ to have him still be in that place and to maybe even grow a little bit more. Because at least Luke does kind of come back around a little bit towards the end of 8. I wish they hadn't done all that with him, but I'm at least thankful that that happens.
Well, and JJ did us a favor again with Lando because, oh no, I went with Luke to investigate this Sith artifact stuff.
Right.
So like JJ's kicked the door open and be like, well, he wasn't just hanging out on the island. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right. Which is what he hints at in 7, right? Because he says, Han says, most of us who knew him best think he went to look for the first Jedi temple or something. It's like he's looking for answers, right? Why did the project fail?
Yeah. He's being proactive. Right. He's not just moping on the island.
Right.
The last question that remains for us is how does the gospel apply? And I think we probably all want to go to Ben and Han.
Ben Solo.
Yeah. So I'm going to do this just up front, and I'm going to see if y'all think of any smaller shades. One way I see the gospel in The Rise of Skywalker is what I love about Star Wars. I'm the guy who said we won't talk about previous films, but I'm doing
here
it.
Here we
it's
go.
My, it's my podcast.
Yeah.
The Rebels were always a church. These weirdos from all these weird backgrounds who weren't always the best people could come and find themselves in something that mattered more than they did, to redefine their character. It could give them people to care about. And like, that's what we got back to in The Rise of Skywalker. Rey does have a family now. I almost wish that she hadn't ended up on Tatooine burying the lightsabers by herself. I wish she'd have went and got on a ship with Finn and Poe. Because now we're back to that idea that, like, it's not just loving what we love that will cause us to win, whatever Rose's line is.
Yeah.
But it's loving these things together. And we get that literally from Lando's mouth. You know, it wasn't because we were some incredibly brilliant generation. We leaned on each other and good came about. And again, it's a secularized, diminished view, but it is like the church as the family we all need.
Yep.
Even if we come from rich family lines, that we get more of what we need in community through this group of people. And I think that's one of the reasons Star Wars, I think that's why you find yourself imagining yourself in a Star Wars story.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, how many times have people you sat around with conversations have been like, oh, dude, you would have totally been Han Solo, you know, or you'd have been like Luke or whatever. Like, you try to identify with those characters.
So, Joe, just set up for our listener Ben's redemption. Before I give you the mic, though, you guys are Star Wars heads. Did the lightsaber battle between Ben and Rey leading up to this moment, is it just me, or was that an homage to the Mustafar battle where they're flipping over waves and whatnot between Anakin and Obi-Wan? Do you think I'm reading too much into that?
No, I think it is. And I think JJ was clear that this movie's supposed to be, I mean, he was clear there was going to be fan service, right? Like, this is supposed to be an homage to all of Star Wars, and it's supposed to also wrap up the entire saga.
Sure.
And so, obviously, Palpatine coming back is the biggest way that's all tied together. But, I definitely think that it was an homage to Mustafar. And actually, I'm just throwing in there, they don't tell you this in the movie, but in the opening scene when Kylo Ren is on this planet, there's like these, it's just like burnt out, and there are trees that are like burnt out, and he's tackling this hooded character and putting it down, and that's where he finds the Sith Wayfinder that helps him find Exegol, where Palpatine is.
Uh-huh.
I read in Pablo Hidalgo, who's one of the good Star Wars guys, has written a companion, and the companion says that is Mustafar.
Oh, wow.
That's why there's like red glow in the background. And these are like these kind of weird Sith acolyte characters that are like there to like worship Darth Vader or something. And he's fighting through them all because I guess they don't want him to have the Wayfinder or whatnot.
Sure.
And takes it. So, again, that's why Star Wars is awesome, because here's this 20-second scene and it's way cooler than you thought. And we can write books about it.
Yeah. Can I bone you out for a second? My wife, Christy, was telling me she read a review of The Rise of Skywalker that was critical. And one of the author's main points is that we don't ever find out who those people are, and we don't know what their motivations are, and that it does disservice to them. And she's like, you dummies. Like, you don't, every bad guy doesn't have some abusive childhood right. that justifies his actions.
Yeah. Right.
These are bad people.
They're just bad guys.
And Kylo's acting bad by mowing them down. Shut up. So anyway, that's wonderful, and that's I'm totally going to go check out that
list. Yeah, for sure.
So Joe, set us up.
Okay, so first of all, I feel morally obligated to go on the record, and I'm ashamed to admit this. I feel morally obligated to go on the record, and I'm mostly saying this.
You need to publicly confess.
I do. And I have to say this because my best friend, Nick, is sitting right next to me. And if I didn't admit it, I'm sure he would hold me accountable to admit it. I was one of the people that said that Kylo Ren should not be redeemed.
Sure.
That I said that, you know, I like him as a bad guy. I think he should stay a bad guy through the whole thing. And on the record, publicly, in front of my friends, God, and all of you listeners, I confess that I was 100% wrong. Like, 200% wrong. It was an incredible moment.
In your defense, Kylo Ren killed Han Solo.
Yeah.
So, like, it's really hard not to want him to die.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just killed Han Solo. So
well, if I can add some salve to your wound.
Please. I'm dying over here.
JJ did it perfectly.
Yeah,
he did. That's the best of both worlds.
Ben can't come out to a watching universe and say, my bad.
Yeah.
That guy's immediately going on trial for war crimes.
Right.
He can't come back as a public figure. He didn't.
Right.
He was redeemed, and he died in a redemptive act.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you have to have.
Yeah.
Which, ironically, what does he want in the very first time we really see him talking? Sure. He's talking to Darth Vader's helmet, and he says, show me grandfather. He wants to fulfill his legacy, right? He wants to be like his grandfather. All right,
and,
go ahead. Sorry.
And to go really big with the whole scope of the thing, Anakin is seduced to the dark side because Palpatine offers him a chance to escape death.
Right.
Because he's conflicted about Padme. And ultimately, there's only one who actually does that, and it's
Ben.
It's Ben,
and he cheats it and cheats to give it away.
To give it away, which is that's awesome. Incredible. Yeah. I got chills, man. That's an incredible storytelling. All right, so the setup: Ben Solo is on this just completely resolved path to burn down the past to achieve ultimate power. In fact, the reason why he is going after Palpatine in the very beginning of the movie is to kill him because he sees him as a threat to his power. And that the rest of the film is him sort of trying to consolidate and resolve that power. And Rey stands in contrast to that power. She wants to bring balance, restore, and take him down. And so there's this incredible fight scene. There's a couple of incredible fight scenes between the two of them. Where they are sort of battling back and forth, and he is trying to kind of break down her resolve by talking to her about her lineage.
Because his whole goal is to bring her under his sway.
Yeah,
he's right. Palpatine thinks he's out there trying to hunt Rey down to bring her to him, and he's trying to join forces with her so they can kill Palpatine and rule.
And rule together, right. The two of them on sort of a Palpatine's throne. And in a sort of culminating fight, they are fighting in the ruins of the original Death Star on Endor. And Rey is losing. She's wearing herself out on just attacking him relentlessly. Very reminiscent of Luke Skywalker in Return of the Jedi when he's pounding on Darth Vader. And she's sort of worn out. And Kylo Ren is there ready to strike the final blow. Leia calls out to him.
Calls him by his name.
Calls him Ben. Name, by the way, just the idea of names is so, it's so integral to Star Wars, but also what a Christian ideal that is.
Yes.
The idea of like true names and what names
like mean. Like pagan names and Christian names,
yes.
Right?
So
it's been a thing in church history.
Ah, so good. So she calls him by his name. He holds back, doesn't kill her. She mortally wounds him. And then
with his own saber, right?
Yeah. He drops his saber.
Right.
She grabs it.
That's right.
She turns it on and puts it through his gut.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. And she mortally wounds him. And then with tears streaming down her face, she uses her newfound ability, a very Jedi ability, to heal and heals him of this wound. And she has a line, and she alluding back to a line that he said in their first fight. And she says, "I did want to take your hand, but I wanted to take Ben's hand." And then she kind of just leaves him there. And the next thing we see of Kylo Ren when he comes back on screen is he's standing there sort of contemplating what has just happened to him. And from behind him, we hear, "Hey, kid." And Han Solo.
It's so good,
Han Solo is there.
It's going to be one of the best scenes in the Star Wars main movies.
For sure.
My kids will recognize this.
Yeah. And I actually said at the beginning of the podcast, my favorite moment is Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back. First of all, sitting next to Nick and I watched this movie together, sitting next to each other. He was ugly crying and I was ugly crying. It was awful. Just tears were just flowing. And what's brilliant about the scene is J.J. Abrams goes right back to 7, and he and Ben Solo and Han Solo, I'm going to call him Ben Solo now.
Yeah, Ben Solo.
Ben Solo and Han Solo have sort of a recapitulation of their conversation at the end of 7. And Ben Solo starts off by saying, "Your son is dead." And Han Solo says, "No, my son is alive. Kylo Ren is dead." And, oh man, I'm getting emotional. And Kylo Ren says, "I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it." And Han Solo reaches up and puts his hand on his face. And Kylo Ren throws away his malformed, destructive, unbalanced,
broken
tool of death. He throws away the lightsaber and embraces his true identity as Ben Solo, and then immediately tries to correct the mistakes that he's made by going to help Rey.
Well, he's back to running towards Palpatine.
Right.
This time not to take power.
Right.
This time to...
Well, he doesn't even have a weapon.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
he's just running in there with no weapon. Well, doesn't he have a blaster? See, I think that was...
Does he have a blaster?
Because when he lands and he's running through, we see him like shooting behind
himself. Oh, yeah, you're right.
But I just thought that was so much like he's a Solo.
Oh, yeah.
He's running around with,
right. just like his dad.
Just like his dad.
Yeah.
And that...
Which is the same question his dad asked him. Which the same thing he told his dad in 7, right? On the bridge, where he says,
"Yeah,
I know what I have to do,
but I don't have the strength to do it."
First time he kills his dad.
He kills his dad.
Second time he throws his weapon.
Now I need you, Jeff, to talk about why Han Solo is not a Force ghost and why that matters. Because you said this, and dude, it is so good. So you have to share this.
Yeah, and I may choke up on this too. But the whole issue here, we know the dead coming back to speak from Star Wars, but it only happens with Jedi because they become one with the Force. Han Solo was not Force sensitive, but he's there in person speaking to his son.
And he looks as real
and
tangible as anybody. And he doesn't look like a Force ghost. He's not ethereal. He looks physical.
Yeah. I mean, physical enough to put his hand on his son's cheek.
Yep.
And so what we know from that is this is not dependent upon the Force bringing Han back. It's dependent upon Ben's memory of his dad. And he is so confident that his dad would forgive him and receive him back that he never doubts his dad would say, "Yes, you're still my son." And so what gives him the path to redemption is his confidence in his father's steadfast affection for him. And dude, it will get you fired up, man.
It's assurance, right?
Yeah. Like
he is assured that it doesn't matter what he's done. His dad would forgive him of it, and that he would always be Ben Solo to his dad.
And the worthiness of Han Solo in that moment, and of course it's just a memory, I get that, but the worthiness of Han Solo in that moment to look at Ben Solo as Kylo Ren and say, "You have earned wrath," mm-hmm. right? Through your actions, you killed your good father, right? Like you stabbed, you struck out in aggression, in a power grabbing, rebellious act. You struck out in aggression against your good father. You are worthy of my wholehearted, absolute, and totally just wrath. And instead, he calls him by name and says, "No, that evil thing is dead, and my son is alive."
Yeah, and his dad spoke that into
My gosh, man.
Yeah, dude,
that is so good. And again, for the record, I freely and openly admit to all who ask, I was 100% wrong. I'm so thankful for that scene. It is incredible.
And look, I don't want to go too Jesus card on this. I don't want to be trivial about this, but like, the reason that works is because I know of a story where the Father laid down his life so that the people who were his enemies could be redeemed. And it was a product of his character. You know, John MacArthur has that sermon on the prodigal son. And the story ends with the father and the elder brother,
right,
standing outside of the house. And, you know, John says, we kind of read this like the story's unresolved. It's not. We know what happens. The elder brother beats the father to death and attempts to take his household. But we also know where the story goes from that the father rises and he calls prodigal son and elder son to repentance and new life in his name. You know what I mean? And so, like, we have a Han Solo here who does a pretty good Star Wars version of standing in for the redemptive grace of God the Father. Not something I expected from this movie.
Nope. No.
It was better than I expected from this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the whole, I mentioned this earlier, I really thought that Ben Solo would be redeemed, but I thought it would be more about fulfilling, again, because J.J. kind of clearly had this idea that Kylo Ren wanted to finish what his grandfather started, but that at some point he would have to realize that his grandfather's legacy was throwing Palpatine down a shaft, right? At the end of the day. And so I thought that would be the thing. And so I was, which would have been cool, but I'm pleasantly surprised when that was the thing that like made my, when I didn't expect to see Han Solo, because like you said, I knew he couldn't, he's a character that can't come back through a Force ghost. So it was good stuff. Well done to J.J. Abrams, regardless of whatever squabbles I have for that. Ben Solo's character arc is really good.
It's really
good storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of put the touches on it. So he jumps into the pit where Rey is confronting Palpatine. We hear an oof.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the raw expression of power that's been his motif.
Yep. He's like, very human.
Yeah, very Solo.
Yeah.
And then I think you or your brother pointed it out, Joe. I'll give it to you.
I got to give credit to Toby Davis on this one. This is Toby Davis, my younger brother, who's also a incredible storyteller and an avid Star Wars fan. This was his note, so I'll let you go ahead and say it.
Well, so there's this, you know, this really cool thing that happens in the sequel trilogy is that stuff can be physically transferred between Rey and Ben's physical location,
right, because of this Force dyad
connection
thing they have going on.
Yeah. So Rey, in confrontation with Palpatine, slips a lightsaber behind her head, and we see Ben surrounded by the Knights of Ren that he used to lead, about to be killed by them.
Yeah, they got him.
I mean, they're wailing.
They got him circled up, letting him have it.
And the lightsaber appears. He pulls it out and shows it to them. And he makes this gesture. How would you describe the gesture?
The gesture is, to me, the exact gesture that Han gives when they dupe all the Imperial guys into running out in Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
And he's got the blaster pulled on him, and then he just kind of smirks and he puts his hands down to his side and just kind of shrugs like, we got you.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
It's that same kind of little flippant shrug and smirk.
Yeah. It is the most Solo thing that he could do in that moment, right? He's got him right. They think they have him. But in true Han Solo form, it's actually he's got him right where he wants him. And
they never saw it coming.
And honestly, in truth, he never saw it coming either.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, it's not like he ran in there with a plan, because Han Solo doesn't
run with all his
because he doesn't either, right? But it goes that way. It goes his way because he's a Solo. And then he does the Solo thing. And then he wrecks them. And it's great. It's just amazing.
I don't know enough about this to figure it out, but somebody I was reading online said that his fighting style in that scene is different. That he tended to rely on an aggressive two-handed, underhanded style fighting as Kylo, but that he's fighting as a different person with a lightsaber.
Yeah, I mean, that's good, and it makes sense because Jedi fight defensively, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because I think you could, if you don't really understand Star Wars, you could be like, I mean, Rey still killed Palpatine, so what's the difference? And the difference is that she's defending herself,
right,
and pushing his own aggression back on him, and she doesn't just strike him down the way that he wants while he's just not aggressing her.
Well,
so there's just a difference.
Luke redeeming Vader, and even Rey here, they both win the same way the Fellowship wins in The Lord of the Rings. They say, no, we don't want the weapon.
Right.
They throw it back in the fire, you know, and so it's definitive. I mean, Tolkien did it better. I'm just going to own that.
Right.
But there's echoes of it here that they reject the power. And so then Ben dies, transferring his life force to resurrect Rey.
Very also gospel, right?
Yeah. And I don't, you know, you guys tell me, kiss or no kiss. It doesn't offend me. I would have been perfectly fine without the kiss.
I there's two things I think about the kiss. It feels like it's just straight up fan service for the Raylo people, right? Or what do they call them? Is that what they're called?
I think Raylo's right.
Raylo's right?
I think Raylo.
I heard
all those on the way over, people that want Kylo Ren and Rey to be together. I'm
Ben Demption. And I'm like,
but I've chalked it up to, you know what? Cringy Star Wars kisses are a thing. That's kind of my stance on it. Like, Luke and Leia kiss twice, and, you know, every kiss with in the prequel trilogy is cringy just because the prequel trilogy is cringy, so none of it
flows
as well. So I don't, it doesn't ruin anything for me. I'm not a fan of it. I wish it wasn't there, but.
Here's what I'll say. I take issue with it, and it's minimal because there are bigger, worse things to talk about in the sequel trilogy, right? So, like, it's not the thing that I get hung up on, but I take issue with it from a storytelling standpoint because I don't think it's there, right? Like, I think it's, you have this one scene where, like, Rey sees Kylo with a shirt off, and okay, can I just go on the record and say I don't understand the obsession with Adam Driver as a symbol of male beauty?
Incredible actor.
Yeah. Oh, he's incredible. Amazing. Incredible actor. No doubt. One of my favorite actors that's doing work right now.
Kind of looks like a horse.
Right? Okay. Yeah. I just don't understand it. Whatever. I'm not an objective authority on male beauty. So, you know, I'll accept that. But, you know, you have all these people that are like, yeah, well, like, I just want to see them be together because they're the two most attractive people on stage. And it's not set up. It's not there. And it is super cringy. And, like, narratively, like, the whole thing is that she sort of adopts the name because she sees herself as a child of these people.
Yeah. So it's like another cringy.
But, yeah, but Ben is also a child of
Star
these
Star Wars kiss.
Luke and Leia kissed. So I'm of two minds, ultimately going to take it. So they would have been better as brother and sister.
Yeah.
That they just would have been better. The kind of stories I prefer end in a wedding. And so I like that there was this. Now, here's the thing. I know there's a lot of, you know, wondering what Finn is going to confess to her. He's going to confess to her that he's in love with her, I think is what's going to happen there. But it's okay. The thing I loved about that scene is that Ben dies with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
And it's the only time we see him smile in the entire trilogy.
I will say the one thing that this plays into more that Rey's character is Mary Sue. It seems to me at some point in the sequel trilogy that every major male character has a thing for her at some point.
Yeah.
And so
Yes. There's this really weird triangle.
There's this thing with her and Poe. And Poe.
At the end of Return of the Jedi. The Last Jedi. Well, sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I did it earlier too.
There's only so many combinations of these words that our brains can handle. So.
Yeah. Which fun, you know, this is not like super hidden knowledge, obviously, but Rise of Skywalker is the only time that there's like a proper name, like a family name. All the rest of them have to deal with like Sith or Jedi or Empire, things like that. It's the first time there's like a family name in the title.
Huh.
Which that threw a lot of people off because a lot of people were thinking because of that like Skywalker would become like a new moniker for some kind of gray Jedi. And I was just like hating that.
Oh, dude.
So I'm so glad that didn't happen.
That would be awful.
There was some theorizing early on about that. But and even in 9, there's this thing where like Poe and Rey, like, they're almost arguing in like a Han and Leia way, right? Like
that
Poe and Rey are doing
and
that.
And so like, to me, like,
and so the fact that she can never be beat, I mean, we're beating a dead horse, but she can never be beat and all the guys love her and, you know, I mean, Daisy Ridley's pretty and that makes sense and everything, but it is kind of annoying.
And to me, there's this idea in storytelling right now that if you just subvert or surprise, like shock and awe, right? Like that's something that is just good. And that's just not true. And like, to me, her being with Kylo Ren, they position all the male characters, like you just said, to be love interest for her, or that they are interested in her romantically in some way. but the weakest of all of them is Kylo Ren.
Sure.
Right? Like, he's the one that's the most distant from that. Finn is obviously the strongest, then right. Poe, and then Kylo Ren. And so, like, the idea is, like, well, he's the one that she really shouldn't end up with out of the three, so let's make it that. Just because that's good storytelling.
Yeah.
And I just, like I said, it doesn't ruin the film.
Yeah.
It's not something that I even really go to when I critique the film. I think there are better critiques, more things to critique. But since we're talking about it, I hate it for that reason.
Sure.
Yeah. And I think that, to me, it could definitely be that. JJ's MO is not just to subvert expectations. To me, it really is more about that whole movie was trying to be fan service, right? So, like,
right.
There's
this, oh, yeah.
Chewie gets his medal, right? awesome.
Are you here for that?
Absolutely. And also, there's the line with 3PO where Rey says, well, you know the odds better than anyone, right? Like, obviously, 3PO knowing the odds. So there's, like, all these things. And I just think that kiss is JJ's way of being like, I'm going to try to please everybody.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, we're all going to say the high point is that Ben died appropriately.
Yes.
In redemption and as a redeemer.
Yes.
Yes. Agreed.
I don't want, I mean, like, that
kiss,
needs to
kiss
be.
Kiss doesn't ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. Line. It doesn't. The kiss does not ruin that for me either.
Not fatal.
So that should be the final note on my podcast survey of this movie with you guys. I just kind of want to put that in the Christian conscience and mind and imagination and say, that's why you're going to like this movie. That's why this movie is a good movie. But before we punch out on this, I don't know there's a bigger star in the movie than C-3PO. He had all the good lines, and then, you know, somebody said that the idea of him, you know, he has to make a choice to sacrifice himself for the group. They said that it was in the trailer where he says, looking at my friends
for the last time. Yeah, looking at my friends for the last time. Yeah.
This is 100% why I don't watch trailers.
Yeah.
Because that was a very powerful moment, and I'm so glad I didn't see it in the freaking trailer.
See, but now we're also getting to one of the things I don't like about the film, though, which is that for not the film, this maybe more so applies to just the entire sequel trilogy, is I feel like they don't really tie themselves to the consequences of actions.
Because they just undo it.
Yeah.
20 minutes later.
20 minutes later. And all like 3PO makes this sacrifice, and I actually take serious offense to this, actually, in that 3PO makes this really incredible sacrifice, and then, like, not very long after it, I mean, very shortly after that, Poe is, like, yelling at him and cursing at him to move. Yeah. And, like this dude just, and like the whole movie.
Which, like, treating 3PO flippantly is like something that Han Solo did.
Right.
Right. Like, he's a get out of my way, never tell me the odds.
Right.
You're annoying me kind of thing. But, like, that's also Han's attitude towards
pretty much everyone. Right.
But, like, when all the main characters treat 3PO like that, it's pretty annoying.
Luke Skywalker in the original trilogy never is dismissive of 3PO.
Which Leia picks up on, right? Leia says never underestimate a droid.
Right.
It's like it's something they have learned together.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but all of the new characters, like, because, like, even Rey at best is indifferent to 3PO, in my opinion.
Yeah, but she's kind of like the little Willy droid. You're right. I hadn't thought about this.
Yeah.
That is a dumb storytelling element.
Yeah. So, and I take serious offense to that. 3PO is an old, wise, to me, he's an old, wise character, at least in the sense that he's there. Mm-hmm. Like, who are you to tell me? I mean, Rey kind of comments on it, metacognitively by saying, you know the odds better than anyone. Obviously, it's an allusion to him always giving the odds. But also, what she's saying is, like, you've been here for it all.
Yeah.
You know what's at stake better than we do, which I like Rey saying that.
Right.
I like Rey admitting, hey, there's someone in the room who's been here and done more and seen more.
And maybe
than
that is a place where, because I've always said Rey always knows better than everyone does.
Right. So it's a small.
Maybe there's a small.
It's not super significant. It's small.
Yeah.
But through most of the film, people are just dumping on 3PO. And I hate that because, like you said, Han does it and that's unique to Han's character, but the other ones, like, even I think in Empire Strikes Back, when Leia and 3PO are in Bespin in Cloud City, like, 3PO is someone that she's sort of, like, happy to be with. Like,
right.
She sees him as a symbol of, not a symbol, but, like, as a place of strength, and she kind of relies on him.
Well, he's like the steadfast butler, right?
Right.
Like,
he's there, and Alfred.
Again, I love Clone Wars cartoon series, but, like, one of the cool things about the Clone Wars cartoon series is that he's, like, Padme's butler the whole time. While she's Senator Padme, he's there, like, giving advice and doing stuff
for her. And he's kind of reminds me of Alfred from the Batman the Animated Series, where he's like, it's before like the new comics where Alfred is like a war vet and can kill people. Like Alfred in the Animated Series, he's just there helping Bruce when he comes home. Michael Caine does this pretty well.
A gentleman's gentleman.
Right. Yeah, a gentleman. Exactly. Like he's not out on the front lines, but like when Bruce needs to be picked up, Alfred's there. And like, yeah, he's sometimes he says like bad, like, or things that you think would not be helpful, but there's an endearing quality to that. And Bruce loves Alfred. Luke loves 3PO. And these new characters are like treating him like the grandpa that doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
And I hate that. That's a good point. And so to get back to what we were talking about, which is the overarching criticism, which is that they're not tied to consequences. They put these characters in positions where, except for Ben Solo, which is why
he's the only one who pays.
Yeah, he pays the price, right? Mm-hmm. Like he makes a decision and suffers the consequences of that decision, rightly so. And
They do that a lot. I mean, even where we get the first foreshadow that Rey's a Palpatine, right? When she's trying to pull the ship out of the sky away from Kylo,
right?
And she blows that dude up with force lightning,
right?
And which I think is, who have we seen use force lightning? I know we've seen Palpatine and Dooku. Are they the only two?
I think so.
There's like a good guy.
I haven't watched all the clones.
So first off, I don't know how I feel about a good guy having force lightning powers, first off. But anyways, because that seems like a distinctly evil dark side thing.
Sure.
So I'm not fleshed through that all the way yet. But she blows that ship up and allegedly Chewie's on it, right?
Right.
But then he's not.
But then, right? That was the other.
So that's another.
I was trying to find the other example of not being tied to consequences, yeah, and that was it. That's it. Chewie dies, but not really. 3PO dies, but not really.
Yeah.
Some of that I'm just not, like, again, those are storytelling critiques that are separate from the worldview part, right? Like,
sure.
To me, that's just bad storytelling.
So here's another thing separate from the worldview that I think is a good thing. One of my favorite things about like epic tales is that the heroes get to go home at the end.
Yes.
And so we kind of left off with like Kylo giving himself up, and that like that's very Christian, obviously. But the idea that like Frodo had been through it too much in Lord of the Rings, so he couldn't go back, right? So like Ben can't go back, right? He does the thing, gives himself up, but like Rey gets to go back to the farm, right? I thought that was a great little touch, regardless of whether there's a deep part of me that wishes that it was Ben going back to the family farm. But like you said, I mean, there's probably just too much evil that he had done there. So I'm just glad somebody gets to go home.
Yeah. And even in Lord of the Rings, Sam gets to go home.
Right. That's where I was going with
that. Yeah. Frodo and Sam are together.
Sam gets to go home.
There's that great line.
Mary Rosie.
Where Frodo says, we set out to save the Shire, but not for me. Right. Like, it's for you. Like,
yeah.
Like, we did the thing so that, because you need to, like, come home and do this, but it's not for me. I can't do it.
You have the big adventure. You have the big tale. You know, it's there and back again. Right. You don't do it just for glory. You do it so that you can have normal, ordinary lives.
Right. Awesome.
Here, here. And again, to the skill of Abrams, he doesn't make this a self-determining act on Rey's part.
The skill of Abraham.
Yeah. He doesn't make that a self-determining act on her part. She doesn't just stand up and say, I'm Skywalker now, right? Luke and Leia show up to bless her decision,
right?
You know, and to sort of
like it's okay.
Seal it,
yeah.
You know, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, my brother brought up some good points about the movie might also be accurately called The Rise of Palpatine, and how good would it have been if she accepted her identity as a Palpatine, but sort of
changed it.
Yeah, it like changed the legacy.
And that's what we were talking about. I think both work.
Yeah.
I think that would have been a cool way to subvert expectations
right.
in a way that was helpful.
In a way that was helpful to the story. And narratively consistent.
Not just for the sake of subverting it.
And narratively consistent, as much as I hate the movie, that would have been more narratively consistent with The Last Jedi, which is really all about anybody can be a Jedi.
Yeah.
Right. So like if she accepts that she's a Palpatine, it says, I'm Palpatine, but I'm a Jedi. That makes it more narratively consistent with The Last Jedi. But from a Christian worldview perspective, I love adoption, right? Like, mm-hmm. as a theme. And so I'm okay. I'm definitely okay with her sort of being adopted into the Skywalker legacy, because I think from a Christian perspective, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm good with it. I don't know. From a storytelling perspective, I think actually she should be a Palpatine, but excuse me. I think that the Skywalker thing works. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, this is what I meant, listener, when I said this group can talk Star Wars all day long.
Yeah, so we've tarried too long.
We're going to put a pin on it here and just say this is a good movie. Go watch this movie.
Yeah.
Don't let the paid critics dissuade you. They don't have a worldview that can understand these things.
Yeah, that's just well said.
And so go enjoy it and make use of the good gifts God has built into just the way image bearers tell stories that look like his.
Yeah, it's cool.
Nick Duncan, you want them to connect with you anywhere on social media? You finally made your Twitter public, man. You're ready to take over
my Twitter
world.
Is public.
The rise of the Duncan.
Yeah. yeah, I think it's just at Nick Duncan 0627, which is my birthday, June 27th. So
I'll try to tag you.
If you want to
That's
give me
a shameless plug.
Give me
and his PayPal.
I like his
weird flex, but okay.
I like Tennessee football, yeah. Star Wars.
That's pretty much it. Tennessee football and Star Wars.
So I will try to tag you in the whatever we tweet out about this episode. And Joe, where are you at on social media?
You know, I'm actually kind of on a hiatus from social media right now. But if you're interested in Scribby Manuscript, we do have a Facebook group. Twitter's coming up, and like you said, hopefully we will be publishing those soon. But very excited about that podcast. So give that a look, give that a listen when it's up, and would love to invite you into that conversation as well.
Yeah, so stay tuned to Pop Culture Corndale stuff, because we will promote that show when it's live and give you the links to social media and whatnot. I'll put a link to your Facebook group in the show notes, obviously, too. Well, gentlemen, thanks for being here for this. Much appreciated. It's good to have you guys on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
It's been awesome.
Glad to. Appreciate y'all. Listener, I'm not sure what we'll be covering. Joe and I are talking about maybe looking at Star Wars as the epic literature of our culture.
Yeah.
And we want to get that done soon. I've got a friend of the podcast, Stephen Burnett, coming on to talk about releasing the Snyder Cut.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, there's just a lot of good stuff coming in the future. I just don't know in what order it's all going to be coming out, but stay tuned. And as you're doing so, don't forget to live every moment as if you are before the face of the Lord, because you are. Talk to you next time.